Good morning. What can Hawaii learn from other places to better remedy homelessness? Today we start our week-long series looking from the outside in. We'll talk with Matt Daugherty, the Executive Director of the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, and the man often called the father of Housing First, Sam Semveris. And we'll get a look at homelessness on Kauai from Mayor Bernard Carvalho. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Also this hour, Janae Wynn Herring, director of tomorrow evening's Mauna Valley Theater production of For Colored Girls, talks about juggling her craft with the need to find a place to live.
It's Monday, September 14th. That's the conversation for this hour. Coming up next, the news.
This is a day that I turn gray. This is a song that I never sang to you. He walks by, I ask for change. He walks away, shaking his head, shaking his head.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Beth Ann. It's going to be an interesting week.
It is going to be an interesting week, and we'll see if we're not shaking our heads in other ways by the end of it. Now, you don't have to look far into Hawaii's recent past to see the numbers of homeless people in the state have steadily increased. This year's point-in-time count shows about 6,200 were homeless in 2011. By 2015, that number swelled to 7,600. We watched the Kaka'ako encampment grow this year and take center stage. We saw Governor Ige create a new leadership team this summer to pull together a better strategy. And we've heard many of those involved talk about best practices. But where do they come from, and what can Hawaii learn from the ongoing experiences of other places around the nation? Today, we start a week-long series to look at those efforts. We'll also get reactions from the mayors of Hawaii's counties and the state's new homelessness coordinator. We start at the national level with Matthew Daugherty. He heads the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. His agency provides community technical assistance and support to ensure that individuals, families, youth, and veterans can get or regain permanent housing and the services that they need. Welcome back to the program, Matthew Daugherty.
I'm happy to be back, Beth Ann, and you really do have an exciting lineup of interviews scheduled for this week. It should be really...
Thanks very, very much. Now, in the LA Times this month, you said, quote, "We strongly advise against communities dispersing people experiencing unsheltered homelessness on their own or in camps. It disrupts the ability to engage and develop a trusting relationships to help them on paths to permanent housing." Since you were in Hawaii last month, there has been the first phase of the Kaka'ako sweep, which was announced weeks ago by the governor's leadership team on homelessness. And many of the people in that small section went into shelters. So what's your assessment of this planned phased enforcement in Kaka'ako?
So I don't know the details of what's happened. It is sometimes a little challenging to keep fully in touch with what's happening there from the mainland. But it does seem like there's an increasing focus on trying to connect the people living in Kaka'ako with shelter and providing that as an alternative to sleeping outside in the encampment. And we definitely encourage offering services and a path to permanent housing for people who are living in encampments. And if we can provide meaningful alternatives and that choice and that opportunity to come inside and really then get linked to permanent housing, that is the kind of solution to this issue of unsheltered homelessness in encampments that we need to see. But that the efforts really need to be focused on not just moving people around and from place to place and neighborhood to neighborhood, but how do we move them onto a path that really is going to provide that opportunity for them to get to permanent housing that's affordable to them for the long term and with the right level of services that can support them and make sure that's successful for them.
That's the bottom line that came out in last month's paper from the Council on the Interagency Council on Homelessness, saying that really it's that steady streaming of homeless people through shelters and into permanent housing. But you know that Hawaii is really challenged in that area, and much of what we hear is still focused on temporary shelters. Are you hearing more about permanent housing, that side of the equation, and seeing evidence of it since you've been here last time?
It does feel like there's more conversation about the need for investments into affordable housing and permanent supportive housing, strategies that admittedly do take time to bring new units online. But to get to a long-term lasting solution, we need to start taking steps on those longer-term strategies now and trying to think about how to use the federal, state, and local resources in really effective ways for bringing forward the kinds of housing units that we need to see in Honolulu and Oahu and Hawaii generally. So being very purposeful about how those funds are offered forward, what kinds of housing projects are going to be prioritized for funding, how can all those resources come together to make sure the units are truly affordable to people who are exiting homelessness. It's not a fix that's going to be able to be possible by next week, but if we don't start taking those steps now, we're just delaying and delaying the time.
And that's
available.
And that's part of the conversation that we've been having for years, that every time there's a delay, it's going to move being able to stem homelessness further into the future. But when you were here, and since the time that you were here, have you had those direct conversations with the governor's team on the homelessness? And do you think that they really understand that part of it?
I think they do. I think they are focused on creating the permanent solutions that are needed, while at the same time responding to some of the emergent issues and the issues with encampments. So it needs to be a balancing act, but we need to make sure we're moving on both of those paths at the same time and not delaying the longer-term strategies while we just respond to crisis after crisis.
On the flip side, in the paper that came out last month from your Council on Homelessness, the Interagency Council on Homelessness, under effective strategies, the paper says that identifying leadership has to also come from within the encampment, and that many of the encampments have some sort of development leader or developed leadership structure, and that it's important to include those leaders in the ongoing conversations. Do you see any evidence of that happening in Kaka'ako?
In that case, I would have to say I'm not close enough to the work to know for sure whether that's a part of the strategy. For us, it's very much a part of the approach of creating a person-centered solution to homelessness, really putting the people experiencing homelessness in charge of the decisions about their lives, the same kinds of decision-making authority that you and I would expect to have over our lives. So it's very much aligned with that idea that the people experiencing homelessness need to be a part of the conversations, need to be helping to shape the decisions about what are going to be the most effective strategies. But again, without being there on a day-to-day basis, I can't speak to whether that's a part of the strategy happening locally or not.
We often focus on the Kaka'ako encampment. We've had so much conversation about that. But we know that homelessness is happening around Oahu and around the state. How would you grade Hawaii's progress to date? And what other places around the nation would be most similar in the way that Hawaii might emulate?
So I think the conversations that need to be happening are happening there, but I think there is more work to be done. So there's definitely a much stronger focus on really understanding the needs of the people experiencing homelessness in Hawaii, getting to a standardized way of assessing people and understanding their needs and their goals, and then trying to take action on prioritizing people based upon those needs. Those are really key strategies. I think there's a much greater sense of the role of housing first practices and how housing first and that focus on getting people as quickly as possible through the experience of homelessness to housing that is permanent and feels like home to them with the right level of now on trying to move towards those practices. But still more work to be done, and agencies need support and training in order to move towards those practices and better solutions. So a lot of really positive signs of heading in the right direction. I think you're going to hear from a good number of communities this week, as I understand it, that are making real progress in moving towards those practices as well. So I think Houston, and you're going to hear from someone in the mayor's office later this week, they have made remarkable progress on building the collaborative structures that are needed to make sure that every public agency is working together and focused on the same kinds of solutions. That's coming together in Honolulu and Hawaii as well, but I think that'll be great to hear about. You're going to hear about Los Angeles, which I think is challenged in similar ways with Honolulu in terms of a high-cost rental market, a market in which it's challenging to develop housing and expensive. But there they've put together fantastic public and private partnerships, bringing all of them in flexible ways in order to invest in the very solutions that they're seeking. And as I was mentioning earlier, that's, I think, a shift that needs to happen there as well, is really being very purposeful about what the public funds are being spent on and making sure they're prioritizing spending them on the kinds of housing projects that need to be in place. You're going to hear from the state of Utah and Lloyd Pendleton, a man I've worked with for many years, where they have really used a focus on interagency collaboration at the state and local level to combine all of the resources and focus on adopting housing first practices and principles across their entire system, and really using the power of public agencies to move forward jointly and with a very strategic, data-driven focus. So it'll be great for you all to hear more about what was successful in Utah.
Well, thank you so much for reading through some of our guest list. Nice to know that you had a look at that, too. We appreciate that. And thank you very much for your time this morning. We'll be talking to you, I'm sure, in the future.
I appreciate the chance to speak with you again. Thank you so much.
Matthew Daugherty is the Executive Director of the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness. It implements Opening Doors, the federal strategic plan to prevent and end homelessness. This is The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. It's now 8:14. Coming up, more than a sacrifice of stability for art. But first, here's your backyard quiz.
In today's backyard quiz, a man who was described in his 1997 obituary as the patron saint of the down and out in Honolulu. He was an Episcopal minister whose so-called peanut butter ministry in Honolulu was founded in 1978 in a shack on Smith Street. As the story goes, all they had back then was a jar of peanut butter, a loaf of bread, and some instant coffee. His legacy is carried on today by the Institute for Human Services, which serves 600 to 700 meals a day at its two service centers. The man we're thinking about this morning had been through his own struggles with alcohol and depression and once said, "I have a pedigree for the work that I earned the hard way. I know how it feels to be on the yonder side of the diagnosis. Life is like a phoenix bird that rises out of the ashes." He was a pioneer of efforts to reach out to homeless people in Hawaii, and this morning we're looking for his name. We'll be back with it in a half hour. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets a T-shirt.
Support for today's programming comes from Hawaii Theater Center. The new season opens with Fandango, a quartet playing a mix of Latin, Balkan, and classical sounds, 4 p.m. Sunday, September 27th, hawaiitheater.com.
Janae Wynn Herring is a theater director and performer who speaks with candor about the ways her own experiences of homelessness and a diagnosis of bipolar disorder have affected her work and her life. As she prepared tomorrow evening's Manoa Valley Theater stage reading of En Tozake Shonge's For Colored Girls of Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Was Enough, we spoke with Janae about her recent struggles.
Though I was very, very ill, my landlord thought it was best to rent out my apartment to someone else. It was in his best interest to find someone he knew was going to be able to pay rent, of course. That makes sense. So I was evicted in January. By then, I had no extra money left. I just had what welfare was paying me. I was in treatment trying to regain strength from being ill, but I wasn't able to get work at that time. And I'm still in recovery, actually, to this day. My chosen work is theater. My profession is marketing. So I was working in development for a year at the other job. For several years on the island, I had been working in marketing in several different jobs. So I had been earning a decent wage, decent living wage. My master's is in marketing. My bachelor's is in theater, but my passion is theater. I had been working on starting my own production company for quite a few years now. Actually, losing my job gave me the opportunity to just focus in on starting my own production company, though being homeless and sick at the same time made it really difficult.
Yeah, you don't often hear people describe being homeless and sick as an opportunity.
No. No, it wasn't an opportunity, but after a while, I kind of made it an opportunity with help, of course, of friends and support from my family.
Yeah. There was, in the midst of all this, you were diagnosed bipolar. Is that accurate?
Yes, I was actually diagnosed bipolar back in 2007. Mm-hmm. And me being a workaholic, that didn't help either. I'm high-functioning bipolar. But when you are bipolar, whether you're high functioning or not, high stress can cause sickness.
Yeah.
And it can cause you to get very ill. And the types of jobs that I worked were the types of jobs I really enjoyed. Marketing, I love marketing. I love the fast pace of working in a sales office and coming up with ideas and getting people hyped up and excited about something. But it's a very high stressful job when it is not your job, because you're not allowed to say when to stop. It's up to your boss to say when to stop and when to go. So when your boss says go, you have to go. There's been many times when I've gotten sick, but never as sick as I did this last time. I've never ended up in the hospital like I did this last time. I almost lost my life this last time. What? And that taught me a lesson.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
Why this play for Colored Girls? Why was this a passion project for you?
You know, this project, actually, I am part of a worldwide production integration called Project One Voice, which is run by Eric McMillan McMahon out of New York. And for Colored Girls, he actually did this project last June. And Hawaii did not get a chance to do For Colored Girls last June because I actually was in another show at MVT at that time. So we weren't able to do it last year. But it's a show I studied in college, and I love this show. It's a show Dwight Martin really loves at MVT. So when Eric in New York said that they were doing focusing in on this play around this time in September as their book club series, which is another project, Project One Voice does, is an online book club. And he said that we could produce the show in Hawaii as part of his book club series. I spoke with Dwight, and we were just giddy about that idea. So this story for Colored Girls is an empowerment story. The messages of empowerment for Black women, but it's a empowerment for anyone really who is struggling. And everyone has a struggle. Every single person has a struggle. And one thing I have learned in working with this play and working with the ladies who are in this play who have told me their story is that we need to have something to give us that boost, to remind us that within ourselves we can find a way to go forward. And
I would think, Janae, your own story would be a pretty good object lesson along those lines, right?
Right, right. And, my own story is, it's weird to say I'm glad this happened, because you can get complacent in your life without having something push you forward. And I know I was starting to get used to having a regular 9-to-5 job. It was safe. It was secured. And I might not have gone forward with my true passion if I wasn't given this boost of having such an obstacle of homelessness. And I did have a lot of help and support from people who love me, and even some strangers who didn't really know me but had love in their heart. And that's an empowerment right there, is love. And when you have love from other people and that enters inside you, you're empowered to do. So whatever struggle you have, you can persevere.
Well, you know, Janae, we just met mm-hmm. a little while ago, and I would not have, had you not told me about your struggles with homelessness, the being high-functioning bipolar, I wouldn't necessarily have picked up on that, because you have what I would call a kind of a positive affect. Do you think that's true about you?
I think it is. I get down a lot. Sure. I really, really do. I am a realist, but you have to take the truth and put a positive spin on it. Sometimes I look at the truth and I just get down. I think it's a normal thing when you look at what's real in front of you and you get disgusted. But when you fall down, you got to get back up, dust yourself off, and just keep walking forward. Because you only have you have three choices. You can go backward, you could just stop, or you can keep going forward. And I have to keep going forward.
Janae Wynn Herring is the director of the Manoa Valley Theater Studio Series production of For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough, by Ntozake Shange. There's one performance only tomorrow evening at Manoa Valley Theater. It's a co-production with Project One Voice and Excellence Happens, and you can learn more about it on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for The Conversation comes from Mattson, proud to help fund construction of the American Cancer Society's Hope Lodge in Hawaii, a place for Hawaii's cancer patients and their caregivers to stay. Learn more about Mattson's giving at mattson.com.
We wake you up in the morning. We're with you on the commute both ways and on weekends too. And you can count on us in times of emergency. These listeners know the value of the true friend they have in Hawaii Public Radio, and we gratefully acknowledge Karen White of Pepeakeo, Linda He of Honolulu, and Susan Slavish of Kaneohe. It's a fact. Member support keeps HPR in business. Please call us at 955-8821, weekdays 9 to 5, or you can donate online at hawaiipublicradio.org. According to data collected this year on about 3,400 homeless Oahu households, about a quarter of them need only a little more money each month to be self-sufficient. What they don't need? Other services, because they don't have other issues contributing to their homelessness, just the lack of a few hundred dollars. So is solving homelessness for this group a matter of shallow subsidies? Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has a reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So, you know, it's always sort of an argument of a few more dollars would make it the month handleable for a lot of families. But in this case, it seems like this is just the crucial amount of a few hundred dollars more that means that they could not be homeless.
Right. And we're talking about rent subsidies, you know, between $150, maybe $500 a month. And that money is available, comes from federal support, distributed through various city and state services. And another term for it, as you said, shallow subsidies. I mean, all of us, I think, or many of us anyway, I certainly have experienced this, being short every month or a month or two out of the year. Many of us do live paycheck to paycheck. But yeah, as many as a quarter of these households that were surveyed said, if I just had a little more help, I'm going to be able to pay the rent. This is called rapid rehousing. And the idea behind it is that it's a much more effective, much more cost-effective way to keep people off the streets rather than more dramatic things like case management or applying for Section 8 vouchers and that sort of thing.
These are people who just have more month than money. Right? And
yeah,
what is the progress on having those shallow subsidies made available? I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time when Scott Morishige was still heading Focused. He had been bringing this up over and over again. Appleseed Law Center, they've been talking about this for a long time. But where does this money come from?
A lot of it is federal money that is distributed, HUD money, really, Housing and Urban Development, that's distributed through these agencies. The idea here is to expand it. It already exists, but groups like Focus and Appleseed want to expand this. And this is something that the city is looking into. But I think the reality check here is that there's no blanket solution to homelessness. It's going to take a variety of things. And these rent subsidies, these shallow subsidies, may not work for some people, but would work for others. And we now have officials saying that, you know, they're looking more and more at doing this, a different approach than Housing First. But, you know, like Housing First, rapid rehousing shares the very same principle, which is the most important thing is to get people off the streets, get a roof over their head to help them get going and get by.
Exactly. And especially when we're looking at lots of different ways of being able to end homelessness for this group, it really does seem to just come down to a little bit of money. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Chad Blair is the political reporter for CivilBeat.com.
Support for today's programming comes from Manoa Valley Theater, presenting the Hawaii premiere of In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play, a Victorian-era comedy about marriage and intimacy. Opening this Thursday, ManoaValleyTheater.com.
Tonight at 5, it's The Body Show with Dr. Kathy Kozak. And Kathy, there's been kind of an ongoing discussion about prostate testing, yeah?
Well, I think there always will be. When we look at the statistics, does it make sense financially to be screening for prostate cancer? Yes and no. But when you look at the individual patient situation, there are people who have high risk for developing this, and earlier treatment, in some cases, really can make a difference. So we're going to talk today about a little bit of those controversies and when we should consider just watching and waiting as opposed to aggressively intervening, and why there's still a controversy in the first place.
Well, my understanding, Kathy, is that it's one of the more preventable cancers if caught early, yeah?
Well, that's sort of the interesting part about it. In some cases, it can be treated early and therefore more effective if you're young, but in some older people, we should kind of watch and wait because it may never get really bad. So we're going to talk about how to know the difference between the two groups and how that really has an impact on pretty much every man in your life.
That's a pretty important discussion. Thanks very much, Kathy.
Thank you.
That's The Body Show with Dr. Kathy Kozak tonight at 5.
For the last 5 years, Hawaii has heard a lot about Housing First. That's the model developed by Dr. Sam Samberis to provide immediate access to permanent supportive housing to homeless people with mental health and addiction problems. It came out of Pathways to Housing, started in New York in 1992, and has since spread into a national initiative. As part of our week-long series looking at homelessness in Hawaii from the outside in, we wanted to know how well Hawaii's use of the Housing First model compares to other cities. Dr. Sam Samberis has been charting Hawaii's progress. He joins us by phone now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Good to be with you.
Thank you for being with us again. Housing First especially targets the chronically homeless, people affected by mental illness and addiction, who often go in and out of the revolving door of jail or hospital. And that's taxpayer money paying for it, along with the sweeps. Aside from the humanitarian argument to help these folks, what's the latest economic data that shows that housing chronically homeless people and keeping them housed is cheaper than just managing them?
Well, it's a huge shift in the way that people actually live their lives. I think one of the reasons that we had not been practicing housing first was an erroneous belief that people with complex needs like mental health problems or addiction problems or health problems first needed treatment before they could be so-called ready for housing. So we have set up a whole industry, if you will, in the homelessness services area that treats and treats and treats people, hoping to cure mental illness and addiction, which we still don't know how to do quite fully, in order for them to get housing. In that scenario, what happens is for the people, especially among the homeless, who are going in and out of hospital and then back to the streets, there's a lot of time and effort and resources spent in treatment and treatment again with no discharge plan to safe, affordable, permanent housing. And so their conditions don't really improve over time. And as a taxpayer, we are actually paying for a lot of treatment. Sometimes people get incarcerated because of their homelessness, because of crimes relating to trespassing or vagrancy. And then we're paying for criminal justice costs. All of these kinds of costs, invisible, if you don't think about them, are in fact much, much more expensive than simply putting someone in housing and providing them with the kind of supports they need to work with to heal their mental health, addiction, and other health problems. So the mind shift is really making that first reversal and understanding that housing is, in a way, a form of treatment for these conditions. Your outcomes are much, much better, both on how ending homelessness immediately, and then, of course, huge savings on the acute care spending of the health, criminal justice, and detox and other service costs that are immediately reduced when someone is housed.
There seemed to be much more momentum, though, around Housing First a few years ago. At least that's a perception. Looking at Hawaii through the lens only of Housing First, how well do you think the state's doing now? I mean, the legislature cut loose $4 million this last session. Wondering if you're giving more input to the governor's new leadership team on homelessness?
Well, you know, when I was there a couple of years ago, there was a very strong team in place implementing a Housing First program. They had received a federal grant, and that program is up and running. It's run by Helping Hands in conjunction with Catholic Charities and other organizations making the referrals. There has been a slight growth in the expansion of Housing First in Honolulu. The Veterans Administration has embraced Housing First for their ending veterans homelessness program through HUDVASH. The state has a small Housing First program. So that there has been a hopeful minor start in Housing First, but the hope when I was there 2 years ago was that the program would be taken to scale. We know it's effective. We know it can work in Honolulu. And the question that remained on the table was, how can we take this thing to scale? Is there a municipal and statewide policy and financial commitment to address chronic homelessness in Honolulu? That seems to have evaporated, and what seems to have put in place is exactly what you're describing, another group looking to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. We were well on the way to a solution, I thought.
Well, for years, Hawaii's low inventory of low-income affordable rentals hasn't been growing at anywhere near the pace that we need. There are hundreds of affordable units that are still languishing, waiting for some money to rehab them. For Hawaii to get to functional zero for chronically homeless and even other homeless populations, that bottom line still is a need for low rental housing. So given Hawaii's current appeal to the luxury market and the high value of land here, what's a compelling argument for developers to build low-income housing in Hawaii that you might see now that wasn't present a few years ago? Or is there one?
Well, yeah, that's a now you're getting, I think, to what, is the heart of the matter, affordable housing and poverty, and how do we commit to building affordable housing? And does it have to be simply a for-profit idea where developers need to be incentivized? You know, remember, we got into this problem because the federal government essentially abdicated its responsibility back in the 80s, with the supply-side economics and trickle-down theories that still haunt us today, which may work well for venture capitalism, but don't really work well to solve social problems. At some point, and if you look at the successes of other states like Utah and Louisiana to some extent, and states that have committed to ending chronic homelessness have made an investment, both at the state level and the municipal level, to either through tax breaks or other kinds of financial incentives build affordable housing. There's no way that we're going to solve the problem of homelessness, which is really code for what do we do about the poor people in our society. Mm-hmm. This is the very bottom of the 99%. And in some ways, the homeless represent a much, much greater number of people who are working one or two jobs just to manage to stay in housing. They're just one step away from going into homelessness. So that if we can solve chronic homelessness by investing in the building of affordable housing, putting back the infrastructure we need, then we can think about addressing the problem of poverty overall, which nobody wants to talk about. It's a much bigger issue.
Dr. Tsimbaras, I wish we had more time to talk. Unfortunately, we have to say goodbye for the moment, but we'll talk to you, I hope, more in the future. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sam Tsimbaras is the founder of Pathways to Housing, started in New York City in 1992. He developed the consumer-driven, evidence-based housing-first model.
In this morning's backyard quiz, we thought about a man who led the effort to reach out to Hawaii's homeless population with his celebrated peanut butter ministry, founded on a shoestring in 1978. He was an Episcopal minister who had served as vicar at St. Stephen's Church in the Fields in Wahiawa, as rector for the Good Shepherd Church in Wailuku, and as archdeacon of Maui, as rector of St. Christopher's Church in Kailua, and as vicar of the Episcopal Chapel in the Reef Hotel in Waikiki. He had his own struggles with alcoholism over the years and spoke candidly about them. With his Institute for Human Services, he said, quote, "I'm not here to subsidize laziness or foolishness. If a person really wants to try, however, I'll bend over backwards to help him get his life back in order." His name was Reverend Claude Francis Dutille, and that's today's quiz.
And we had a winner. Miho Miki May called in and knew the answer. A T-shirt's coming your way. Thanks very much. At 8:44, that's today's quiz. If you've got one, send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from REC Solar, providing solar installations for mid to large businesses statewide, including retail, industrial, agriculture, cold storage, and more. RECSolar.com.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look at what's happening in the gigantic universe around our tiny itty-bitty planet and also what we can look for in our night skies. As usual, we turn to Christopher Phillips, Mauna Kea Astronomy Outreach Committee. Hey, Christopher, what's going on?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be here. So this week, stargazers, Saturn is still visible in the upper left portion of the constellation of Scorpius, or Maui's fishhook, as it is known here in the islands. Saturn will be setting in the west at around 10 p.m., so keep your eyes peeled.
Now, there is something exciting we're going to be hearing about, and it is a major NASA mission to the very edges of our solar system and beyond, and one that was supported by some folks at the Mauna Kea summit.
That's right. We are revisiting the New Horizons mission, which is the journey of a small spacecraft to the distant dwarf planet of Pluto. And as you said, it was supported by several telescopes on the summit of Mauna Kea. New Horizons has completed its flyby of Pluto and is heading out into the dark reaches of the Kuiper Belt. However, the data that New Horizons collected during its flyby is still being transmitted to Earth. And last week, we received spectacular images of the surface of our solar system's most beloved little planet.
And it is little, too, much smaller than our own moon.
It is indeed.
And so let's hear about these pictures.
Well, Pluto has really surprised us. In fact, correction, it's blown us away. These New Horizons images have shown us an incredible landscape that's just as varied and dramatic as anything else you can find in the solar system. We see features that look like valleys and mountain ranges. We can see craters of all shapes and sizes. But most interesting, we see giant fields of ice covering the surface.
I thought the images of the strip malls and the McDonald's up there were the most interesting. So what's up with the, we have ice, is that what it is?
That's right, we have giant blocks of water ice that we see in the image, and they remind us of icebergs and the polar ice sheets of our own planet. What's weird about Pluto, though, is that these giant ice cubes look like they are floating on a sea of frozen nitrogen.
And so New Horizons, it is going to go from there out into space?
It is. Its mission is not over. It's going to journey into the Kuiper Belt, which is a mysterious dark region of space that contains ancient icy bodies.
Well, we'll be looking for some reports of ice and who knows what from the Kuiper Belt.
It's the ultimate solar system cocktail.
Christopher Phillips, Mauna Kea Astronomy Outreach Committee, thank you very much for the report.
You're welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. Catch you next time for Stargazer.
Support for Stargazer comes from HTA, a public charter school serving students grades K through 12 on each island, providing each student with the opportunity for a personalized learning plan combining face-to-face and virtual instruction. Learn more at myhta.org.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay. Aloha, this is Beth Ann Kozlovich, executive producer of HPR's talk shows. An early gift to Celebration 2015 would help us stay right and lower the amount we need to raise on air. You can fly right, too, with our bonus gift of 250 Hawaiian miles, available to the first 300 members calling in. New members may request 500 Hawaiian miles. Phone lines open September 16th. From county to county around Hawaii, homelessness looks different, and countering it may also look different. This week, as part of our series to ask what lessons Hawaii can learn from places around the country, we also want to provide Hawaii's mayors a chance to respond. We start with Kauai. In the point-in-time count this year, Kauai was the only county to post a slight decrease, roughly 40 fewer people counted than last year. Mayor Bernard Carvalho is on the phone with us now. Good morning. Sir, good morning.
Morning.
Oh, good. Glad you're there.
Yeah, I'm here. Aloha. Good morning.
Aloha. Now, homelessness on Kauai, we sort of make the point that it looks obviously different than homelessness on Oahu, but we tend to focus on Oahu. What about Kauai's homelessness would you have us better understand?
Well, you know what? First of all, I mean, we all statewide, right? Everybody has their own homeless issues and concerns and stuff. But for Kauai, although the numbers may seem not too long, too large, like 300, say 340, rounding it off, but if you look at the population of Kauai in relation to the numbers, that's what I shared with my fellow mayors, and so it's really high for Kauai. We have 70,000 population, and the number is around 340, you know, homeless on our island. And so that's the number there. We have sheltered homeless, of course. Very small number and a larger number unsheltered. So knowing that and how we need to address it, I've come up with a plan, a Kauai, to look at how we're going to address that.
Since the point in time count was done, which is in January, although the numbers were just released for the neighbor islands this past summer in June,
Right.
What have you learned about Kauai's homelessness that should factor into how we look at homelessness around the state, and particularly for Kauai going forward?
Well, it's truly our concern. It cannot be just government, cannot be just county, state. It's our concern. And for me, I really feel strongly that we got to take this face-to-face, take the emotional side and go with it. So just in generic terms for Kauai, I'm really moving forward and identify the land divisions or moku system. So I'm looking at 5 land divisions on our island, and within each moku, I've come up with 12 churches. I believe the faith-based community is where we need to be working with and bringing to the table. So we've looked at the moku on our island. We're developing teams of 5 within each moku, where the churches will be the leaders within each moku, and then we work together collectively. Like I said, I've identified 12 pastors throughout the island who will be coming to a charrette. We'll be doing this charrette the later part of this year, which would encompass county, state, our community organizations, our Chamber of Commerce, our Visitors Bureau, Malamapono, landlords, all of them, KO, YWCA, along with the pastors from each of the moku.
Yep.
And I've also gone out and met with and identified key spokespeople from the homeless community. I have 5.
Okay, so that seems to play into something that we heard from Matthew Doherty earlier and the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, that you have to have leaders from within the homeless community, from within the encampments, if there are encampments, or just within the community. All of that said, as you look at Kauai, there's still the issue of affordable housing, not just transitioning people into a place of shelter, but with affordable housing, it's the bedrock of that strategy to end homelessness. How do you gauge Kauai's lack of units that, say, a Section 8 voucher would afford?
Right. So if you're looking at the units part of it, of course, we're trying our very best to address units. There's several phases here. I mean, there's people who need attention, like today, and then tomorrow, and in the future. And so that's why it's important for all of us to tell Kauai's story, if you will. So once we pull this charrette together with all the key agencies, knowing that everybody's willing to help and participate, but I have to get into the grassroots first, you know, and then go from there. Whatever units come, we're talking about micro units, we're working with Kauai Community College, who has the construction arm there, who is doing this little transitioning of container type models that we're looking at. We have little micro units for the ones that really need it and qualify, and how we can, if they don't, then why? We're also working with the churches. A lot of our families live in their cars. It is a shelter, considered a shelter. So if you can park your car on a church property and have access to restrooms, we can create hygiene stations where homeless can come to and get themselves clean and receive some services there within each area. Then I believe we're beginning the process to really address the overall situation. You have mental health issues. You have violence issues. You have just homeless in general. You have people who choose to be homeless too, you know, and they have the means. So we need to really identify, and then action needs to take place.
So, Mayor, how does this play back into the strategy of Housing First, particularly for the chronically homeless, those who are mentally ill and addicted to substances?
Right, and so that's another one. I'm hoping that's why wanting to assure that our neighbor islands are part of the bigger plan, so when the resources come, that we too reap the benefits of what we can do to support that part of our community. And I'm hoping that with this, I go back to my charrette idea to get this whatever resources together, which will include all the levels. Then from that point, we really got to get into the action. And I believe with the representation from the community and the grassroots at the table, we will then get the right message, I believe, and information we need to make the tough decisions to move forward.
You mentioned that you're already hearing from some of those grassroots leadership folks who are within the homeless community. What specifically have they told you that you think we really need to hear and perhaps haven't heard before?
Okay, let me give you an example. One of the key leaders in the homeless community wanted to come here and meet in my office. Said, no, I'm coming to you. I want to meet you folks out there and just to listen. So I went with some of our staff people just to sit down and talk story. And so pretty much what we're saying, you know, some of them just need the basic necessities and they're fine. Some of them can get, they have a shelter at home, temporary housing. Some of them need a home that's short two or three payments or two or three opportunities to get the payment that they need. So it's interesting to hear the different stories, and some of them, you know, they would like just a place to put up their tent. And so we got to figure out what is the best way. Do we want to create tent cities? No, I don't think so. I believe if the churches can adopt a lot of these homeless people, families, and within the churches, and we support some of the churches along with some of the business community, that's the solution. And the ones who need the total housing part of it, then we can work with them as well with the agencies that are going to be at the table.
All right, Mayor, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Okay, aloha, mahalo, and we look forward to some positive results as we address our homeless ohana on our island.
Thanks so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. Mayor Bernard Carvalho is the mayor of Kauai County. This week, we're doing our series on homelessness and looking at it from the outside in, which means other people's perspectives from beyond Hawaii. What do they see, those who have been deeply involved with Hawaii and other cities, which have something to teach us, too? And we're going to also be talking about that issue of the opportunity cost, because there's always a cost to businesses when they have homeless people around them, people who don't want to walk in because, Chris, they, you know, don't want to deal with that, so that may be lost. Is there really a role for business to be playing in this, too, in particular in our state, when it's an issue of tourism?
Well, that's certainly what Mayor Carvalho of Kauai just said, and that yes, everyone has to participate, and yes, the effects are far more far-reaching than the individual impacts that we've talked about so often, that it extends into the wider community. We're going to get a number of opportunities to address that this week.
All this week. And coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk with Beth Sander from Community Solutions. And then we're also going to talk with about the Homelessness Initiative's point person for the mayor of Houston. She'll be here too. And Mayor Kirk Caldwell will join us as well.
And we'll talk about making a very personal photographic record of the homeless experience.
If you missed the show or any part, you can find it again on the HPR2 archive. You can find links to more information about guests and topics there, too. Just look under Talk Shows for the conversation on HPR2.org.
And talk back to us anytime you like. Our talk back line is 808-792-8217. You also can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation. Are at BKOZHPR. I'm Chris Vander.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll see you in the morning for more of The Conversation. See you then.